Happy Monday, everybody. It's June 8th, 2020. And welcome to this morning show. My name is Larry Jacob. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on June 8th, not June 9th. And we have a nice show. We got our old friend John Larmer here. John's the editor-in-chief over at PBL Works, which is the brand name of the Buck Institute for Education. PBL being not Pabst Blue Ribbon, but Pabst Blue Ribbon. But it's project-based learning. They are the experts. And we're going to talk about not only a good definition of project-based learning, which is so popular these days, but I want to nail it down for everybody. And also, okay, we're going to talk about it in today's world, the world of remote learning, see where it goes maybe in the summer through next year. I don't know how things are going to shake out. Neither does John. But we're going to get some great ideas from Mr. Larmer. So it's going to be a lot of fun on the show. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio, just like we always do. We Facebook at EduTalkRadio and Larry Jacobs, and we link in at Larry Jacobs. By the way, that's me. Please go over, check out our other website. It's really key. That is the Equity and Access website at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, which now is an acronym, ACE-ED, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. We invite all educators, anybody interested in pre-K-20 issues and equity and access, to please go over there and join the consortium. It's the place for industry and educator voice, all about equity and access. And we are cranking, and we're putting together a new issue of our official journal, which is ACE, and it'll be up on site. It's an online journal. The current issue is wonderful. If you haven't seen it, it's today-ed.org. Everything over there, by the way, is free. Okay, including membership in the organization. We just want your voice out there. We want to be able to share stuff with you, et cetera, about equity and access in these crazy times. And the new magazine will be out probably the end of next week is what we're looking at right now. So it's Maya's putting it together right now and doing a great job down in Florida. So we'll see what's going there. Without further ado, so anyway, ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. And here's John Larmer. There he is. Hi, John. It's Larry.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
I'm pretty good here in Maine. How you doing in San Francisco?
Okay, considering the circumstances.
Yeah, well, yeah. Are you in the city, or are you somewhere around there?
No, I live
just
north of San Francisco. Our office is in Novato, though I haven't been there in 3 months. I'm working from home these days.
So is everybody else, and I realize that as I was saying it, that everybody's at home. I'm used to working at home. I forget that most people are not, and of course it's in beautiful Novato, which I assume is still absolutely beautiful, and we just got to keep staying safe and trying to figure out what's going on out there. What are you hearing, Jen, in terms of just what you're hearing at PBL Works, what's going on out there from the educators you work with, et cetera? Let's just start there.
Yeah, well, we've been super busy since the pandemic started and schools were closed. I mean, we were busy before, we're always busy, but then it went into overdrive. So we've been sort of hastily converting all of our workshops to online workshops. So there's been no face-to-face workshops this spring.
Yep.
And going into the summer, we're converting our entire PBL World Conference next week to an online conference, but we still have almost 1,000 people attending. So we've really got the online learning down pretty well. We're getting really good reviews for our online workshops. They're very interactive, and it's not just sitting in front of your computer for three straight days listening to somebody.
Yeah.
So that's
your
been stuff's going
always
well.
Good.
And, you know, a lot of schools, though, like you said, are not sure about the future. And so they're not sure if they're going to be doing professional development and project-based learning, or just trying to get their kids online when they're at home, or figure out social distancing when they're at school.
It's really, there's so many challenges out there right now. And but you said before, everybody's busy. I know you heard what I said. We started our American Consortium for Equity in Education. I tell you, we are so busy. Okay, we're fielding calls all the time from the industry. We're getting so many people joining up with us. It's become a busy time. Okay, much busier than normal as people retrench and all that sort of thing. And I don't mean to say anything good about the pandemic, because it's bad. Okay, but the point is, sometimes a bad thing helps you to clean house. Okay, and it gives you a little bit of opportunity and forces you to change some thinking, or think differently and think outside the box. And I think overall, it's going to pay off as it can. And again, I don't mean to say anything nice about COVID-19. Please, if you're listening, COVID-19, don't take it as a compliment. Right, John?
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Larry. We're having sort of a moment of pause in education, I think, where a lot of parents have seen what their kids are doing at home. And in some cases, it's just the same old boring worksheets and textbook assignments. And they can tell that they need to be more deeply engaged. And so, we're seeing a lot of interest in project-based learning. And I think a lot of schools and teachers and students and parents are sort of rethinking education. We've had a couple of good blog posts lately about that topic. Yeah.
What's fun is that the parents can actually, it's funny, it's the old joke, you don't want to go in back in the kitchen in the restaurant, okay, just enjoy the food, all right? And all of a sudden, teachers can see how, the parents can see how the sausage was made, okay? And all it's going to require some changes and all that sort of thing. I think it's all going to work out well. I want you to do me a favor, though. Project-based learning, okay, is really an interesting thing. And people say that all the time, talk about PBL, et cetera. Can you give us a really good definition?
Sure. I helped craft several definitions over the years, and we've gotten down to one sentence that is on our website, pblworks.org, or the What is PBL section. Project-based learning is a teaching method in which students learn by actively engaging in real-world and personally meaningful projects. So that's the
basic
definition.
Going on in the world. There's nothing going on in the world right now, so I guess they can't do that. That was a joke, a bad one,
boy.
By the way. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there's lots of inspiration in current events. That's true.
Yeah, it's just astounding. And actually, I'll ask you that. You know, that's a good way to start. Because I'm an old social studies, like you, a social studies teacher like you are. When I think of things that are going on in the world, I think of social studies stuff. Okay, is that how everybody thinks? When you're talking about designing for a real-world learning experience?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot. I mean, as you know, the pandemic has lots of different angles. You can look at it from a social studies angle, from what the government is doing, laws and social behaviors. You can, psychology, obviously, how people are affected. There's obviously a lot of science in looking at it. You can look at math and the spread of, vectors and the exponential spread of disease. Lots of things to read and write and discuss for an English teacher. So there's lots of interdisciplinary connections for projects about the pandemic.
It's just astounding out there. So, my question really with the project-based learning is is it individualized? Is it classroom? What's happening with it with remote learning now? I mean, where are we on it right now? What are you hearing? And what does a teacher have to know to understand the pedagogy, how to teach it, how the kids will actually learn?
Right. Okay. Well, we often start by differentiating dessert projects from main course PBL. And that's one thing teachers need to know, that it's not just assigning kids what we call a dessert project, the typical things people might remember from when they were in school, like build a model of the pyramids or make a diorama of a rainforest and just building some little thing at home with your parents, maybe helping you if you're lucky in it, so it looks better, right?
Right.
That's what some people think of as doing a project. But that's not really project-based learning. I mean, they may be learning something with that kind of a project, but it's not really very deep. In our definition, the project is really the unit. It's the curriculum unit. So it's the main vehicle for teaching the important content and skills. And it's done usually with the teacher designing a project or maybe co-designing it with students once they get the hang of it. But they're not, you don't just turn students loose to go research something and they come back in 3 weeks and make a presentation. Yeah. And that you could do obviously online. That would work. And there's room for that kind of PBL, the individual research project or passion project. But we like to emphasize also just where a teacher plans a curriculum unit, aka a project, for their social studies course or for their science standards in fifth grade or whatever, and they conduct it with students working in teams at least part of the time, and the teacher is there to facilitate and coach the students and provide the content, the instruction when necessary, or steer kids to resources. So when that's moved online, the same thing should occur. Students can work in teams. I mean, Zoom breakout rooms, very popular now, you know, for kids to meet. Or
yes, they are.
Lots of things in Google Classroom. They can share Google Docs, all kinds of online tools. And kids, of course, many of them already use those tools. And a lot of PBL teachers were already using technology. So it's not a huge shift. The trick is to stay with the kids and check in with them frequently. A lot of teachers are reporting that. They've got to have, you know, daily check-ins, keep students on track. And to engage them in remote learning, you can't rely on your personality in the classroom as much. So that's where having the authentic, engaging topic for a project, it really grabs the kids.
Good point.
Or springs out of their own interest. That's the key, I think, to good online learning.
And that is a good point. A lot of the teacher's personality, which in some cases might be good, okay, disappears online. All right, and you have to do it a little bit differently. So let me ask you a question, and this is an odd question. I remember when I was a teacher 12 million years ago approximately, okay, I would break the kids into groups or give them individual stuff to do based on whatever the chapter of the book was, whatever. And I'm asking this seriously. What's the difference, okay, between what you just described and that? Okay, the old days, John. Probably you were 8 years old when I was teaching back then. Okay, but I'm just serious. What is it? And that's, I think, one of the challenges between older and new teachers and the terminology we use. What's the difference between then and now? What we now call project-based learning to when I used to give my kids group projects. And I'm asking that seriously.
Yeah, no, that's a good question because a lot of teachers are. Sort of they taught the way they were taught or the way they remember, and they might remember being put in a group and asked to do something by the teacher, which is fraught with problems sometimes because, as you know, like, you know, one kid will take over or not trust the other kids to do it right. The A student
absolutely
wants to do it themselves, or they're mad about a group grade and they were penalized. So, yeah, we help teachers sort of overcome that. And think of it like this. I mean, in the workplace today, a lot of work is done in teams, and it's project-based.
Right.
So we try to sort of mimic that kind of environment and that culture and that approach in project-based learning. So students are actually taught how to collaborate, not just divvy up the work and go home and do your part and come back and put it together, but to actually work as a team to create things. So they're taught collaboration skills, communication skills. There's way they have a group contract, perhaps, that spells out how they're going to work together and what's going to happen if someone doesn't pull their weight. You structure the tasks and the product they create so it's not possible for one person to do it all and take over. Lots of tricks we teach teachers and how to handle the management aspect. But
that's interesting.
I think it's important that, it's important, though, that students, I mean, there's not that everything every minute is done in a team in project-based learning. There's still room for individual students to become experts, say, in a particular aspect of the topic, and that you can jigsaw what they learn so students come back to their group as they're the expert on this topic and the other person's an expert on that. And I think it's good to help prepare students for the world of work in the 21st century.
I like that.
And
I like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And as long as the teachers understand, know how to teach what they need to teach in order to make PBL work, okay, to teach the skills of collaboration, okay, that kind of thing,
right,
and communication,
and
that's part of
that.
It's not just me teaching social studies. It's the kids learning social studies in spite of what I do, okay, but me teaching them the skills to do it. I think that's what you're really saying.
That's a lot of it, right? And then you got to sort of trust the process. And for some teachers, it's a little hard to step back. They're used to controlling every minute of the classroom, right? But if you set it up well, the kids are ready to go. You can be the guide on the side, not always the sage on the stage, right?
There you go.
And I should add that what happens a lot of times, though, is teachers, they jump in too fast. And they put the kids in a team and say, okay, kids, go, do the project.
Yeah.
And the kids aren't ready, especially if the kids are just used to the traditional teaching. They're used to sitting in rows, quietly taking notes, doing worksheets. You can't just throw them into the deep end. So you've got to do little short practice activities, practice projects before you launch a larger project. And so they sort of learn the culture and the skills of doing PBL, gradually. You can't just jump in on day one And because that happens a lot of times, it can blow up in a teacher's face.
Of course. Of course. They'd be unprepared, and so are the kids. This is going to be I know for a fact, John, that, and you know this too, that project-based learning is very popular. Teachers like it. They believe it. I'm sure it does. It works. Okay. And PBL works, as your company likes to say. All right. And it works very, very well. Why do you suppose that it has caught on like this? What's the proof that it works? And I know it does. Okay. And I don't think that's a stereotype. I think that's for real. Teachers really like this. Why do they like it so much?
Well, it does sort of restore the joy of teaching into the profession for a lot of teachers. The joy has kind of been, you know, beaten out of them in a lot of ways with all the testing and accountability pressure, the need to like cover content all the time and rush through the curriculum. And with PBL, a teacher can sort of think, oh yeah, this is why I went into this profession, because the kids are, they're coming alive. Their hands are going up. They're asking questions. They're eager to learn about this. They're engaged in my subject or in this challenging task we've got going here, or this interesting problem to solve that means something in the real world. So I think teachers really see the students come alive, and you know, that healthy buzz in a classroom is just a joy to behold. And the research does show it works if it's done well, I hasten to add, because if it's not done well, it's kind of like traditional instruction. You know, it's okay, but it's not going to show all the benefits. But if it's done well, and it gets a little easier over time, the first couple of projects for teachers are always going to be learning experiences, right? But there's a lot of good research. Our website's got a research section that has several studies, so from second grade reading scores going up from project-based learning to AP, high school government and environmental studies. Some really interesting work is coming out of the Lucas Education Research Group on that, showing PBL's effectiveness in AP. So, early grades up through high school, there's there is a lot of research, formal studies. And I got to say, though, that, teachers and students experience, we hear stories all the time, you know, qualitative data about how great PBL is. But you're seeing more and more quantitative research. And as I said, that's on our site. And part of the problem is PBL's been hard to nail down. It can be so many different flavors and ways to do it. It's hard for researchers to study. But they are getting – there's a bit more, you know, of a standardized approach these days, thanks in part to our work in the last – couple of decades to kind of nail down what we call a gold standard for project-based learning. So it's main course, not dessert, and so forth.
And did you guys go after, again, PBL Works, everybody, PBLWorks.org, if you want to check it out, and I hope you do. Do your professional development, are you going in, and you've been using the word teachers a lot, teachers like this, teachers like that, et cetera. But I'm curious, are you going after a school-wide thing, and I'll tell you why I'm asking, or a district-wide thing to get PBL in there? And
yes.
The reason I'm asking, I know kids like PBL, and I know teachers like it too, and it's fun to do. And then you get into a teacher that's just lecturing, okay, which may not be as much fun. It creates an interesting juxtaposition in the kid's mind. Okay, and you know, my point is, where is it best, in a classroom level, in a school level, in a district level, or how do you do it?
We sort of work at all levels. I mean, some of our events are for individual teachers here and there. That's kind of how PBL has usually been. I mean, there's been a few special schools over the years, charter schools or small independent schools that are all PBL, but and the New Tech Network high schools mostly are all PBL. But so there's always been a lot of individual teachers, and that's great, but it's much more powerful when the whole school does it or when
there
a district does it. So we do work with school leaders. We have a whole leadership training program. We partner with school districts for multi-year efforts to really make PBL stick, not just so it's not just one of those flavors of the month that comes and goes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was driving at.
One of those fads. So we try and create the conditions to make PBL really long lasting, from building community and parent support to thinking about your bell schedule, your testing, requirements, the amount of collaboration time you provide teachers, Lots of things in the structure of school, the culture of school needs to change. So we do work a lot. We think it's much more powerful if a school could do it as a whole.
Yeah, and point to things need to change. We're learning that really, really quickly. Not that it was so bad. We know
yes.
we can do it a lot better now. And again, we're being forced to rethink everything, which, again, is cleaning house isn't so bad. Sometimes the fire gets you to throw out a lot of stuff and you rebuild a lot stronger. Go into remote learning about PBL. And what you and I know I asked you at the beginning of the show, but let's get into some details, okay? Give us some examples. How should if teachers are struggling now with what they have to do, is PBL something that they can really turn to, okay? And how would they go about doing that? Just talk about it in terms of the remoteness and the possibility of remoteness for next year in some category.
Yeah, I think
some degree.
I think PBL would be a great solution for remote learning because, as I said earlier, it really helps engage the students much more than traditional instruction would when done remotely. So if you've got an engaging project that kids are going to be able and willing and able, you know, ready, eager to work on it independently. So the day they're not, say they're going to school every other day or something, the day they're home, they're working on their project. And it's not just slugging through worksheets in a textbook. It's actually an engaging project where they can connect to some real world experts online or have, you know, Skype or Zoom calls or phone calls. There are ways to do it. There are ways to do projects without a lot of technology. There are huge equity issues in this, right? I mean, a lot of kids don't have internet connection at home. They don't have computers, or at least they don't have their own computer maybe. So there are huge equity implications. But we've seen no to low-tech projects happening this spring. We've had a lot of webinars. We just cranked out very quickly this spring, plus dozens of blog posts where teachers gave us some of their stories. So for example, students were there was a sort of an English language and arts project, ELA and art project, where students created little like photographs with short pieces of writing about how they were feeling during the pandemic, kind of like as a primary source for future historians.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it was very personal for the students, but they were learning how to write, they were learning art skills, they were presenting it to people online. And that could be done without a lot of tech tools at home. Just you could draw stuff. You could just use your phone to photograph things if you've got a camera on your phone. You know, so there are ways to do projects online without a lot of tech tools. But if you do have tech tools, you know, then it gets you know, the possibilities are out there. And so teachers are figuring out ways to go through all the phases of a project, from an engaging launch to building the content and the skills to creating products, and then publicly presenting their products at the end to some sort of audience outside of the classroom. It's all through Zoom, and you know, students use Flipgrid and Nearpod, and they're putting stuff on YouTube. You know, kids know how to. So, lots of ways to share their work with the outside world. And so, we're seeing like one example, a middle school project back in Colorado called "Making Space for Change." Students were tasked with sort of, you know, what's a sustainable future look like? And they chose aspects of that. And some of it had to do with the pandemic. And they learned that you can still do PBL just fine as long as you, like I said earlier, have the structure where you check in with kids. You have milestones every few days they need to reach. Focus on your kids' social emotional needs. You know, they still want to connect
with
each other. So working in teams is great. Kids are hungry for that. And there, as I said, you can use Google Docs or other tech tools for collaboration online. And in our webinars and the blogs, people have been sharing all kinds of great use of tech tools, from Padlet to have class discussions, to Flipgrid to make videos, to Nearpod to kind of do project management throughout the process. So their teachers are getting better and better at using these tech tools, but it's kind of been a situation. Someone called it, this is emergency remote learning. It's not like pre-planned remote learning, right? So maybe by the fall,
but it can be for next
kind of
year,
practice,
but it can be for next
right,
year.
This kind of a practice. Right. Exactly. They've had a chance to get the hang of it. They've worked out some of the kinks, and a lot of our webinars have talked about the, you know, what went well and what were some of the issues. Teachers will be ready are better able to use project-based learning as a way to teach their curriculum when school might be a little topsy-turvy. I realize that some schools are going to be focused more on, oh, God, we got to teach kids the basics because they fell behind. And that's kind of a myth about PBL, that it's not about teaching content. And, I mean, it doesn't take the place of a literacy. You know, projects don't take the place of a literacy or a math program. It's not a cure-all. But you can still have plenty of reading and writing and math in project-based learning. It's not just a fun and games science or social studies activity.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That is an important myth. How are you finding that teachers and I think this is going to work out good because I, you know, when I was a kid, the teachers, you, although you took tests and all that, a lot of your grade was anecdotal, what the teacher thought of you. Okay, and they put it all together. I'm thinking back to when I was a kid in the 50s and 60s, and that came together as your grade. Okay, now we've been in the age of standardized testing and that sort of thing, and the teacher's anecdotal look has been a little bit less. Obviously, that's going to change now. I certainly hope so. Regarding assessment, which is going to be key, okay, in a remote world, how is PBL assessed best, John?
Well, that's a very common question we get. Do you just throw everything out and just test, just have kids do performance tasks, and that's their assessment? But there's still room for some traditional assessment in project-based learning. We sort of reassure teachers you can still use familiar things like give the kids a quiz or a short test at the end on the content, and that's individual still. Now, online, that has to be done a little differently than in a classroom on a piece of paper, right? I understand that. But it might mean more attention to deeper understanding, not just, you know, fact-based content knowledge. But that's a good thing. I think there should be
a shift toward more.
You know, less memorizing of information and more deeper learning. And so it may mean students have to write to explain their thinking. So a teacher can't just, you know, use a Scantron to get a quick grade. It does involve more work for the teacher in that respect. But you have fewer little daily things to grade, I think. In a good project, you don't grade the whole project with one grade. You break it down with individual assignments and maybe a couple of group assignments in there. But most of the grades should be based on individual performance, not what the group does. I know some teachers don't even grade the group presentation at the end. The kids are just motivated enough by the project to want to do well.
That's what I was saying before. You can see it as an educator. You can see the learning. You can smell the wood burning inside their heads. That kind of thing.
Exactly. And they might still need to document it. I mean, if they make a great presentation, you might also require a written report to make sure, you know, that's a way to assess whether they've learned what you need them to learn. So there's lots of use of rubrics in PBL, and you can give grades both for the product they create, for content knowledge and skills, but also you can even issue grades for some of those 21st century success skills, like how good of a collaborator are they, or are they good problem solvers? You know, there are rubrics for those kind of skills also. So it's a combination of traditional and new kinds of assessment, but it's certainly
good. Good.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good thing, I think, to get away from just that fact-based knowledge type of multiple choice test.
Oh, are you kidding me? It's incredibly important. I'm going to let's focus on PBL works, okay? Teachers need good stuff right now, okay? We can have this conversation, but if they go to pblworks.org, what are the resources they're going to find? What can you help them with right now during this age of remote learning?
Right.
What's
okay.
up there?
Well, we've got a lot on just sort of the basics of what PBL is and is not, and our model for gold standard project-based learning is on there, and our tips for project-based teaching practices. So that's kind of the basics. As I mentioned, we have a research section. We have a big section for our workshops and services for schools and districts and individual teachers. But we have several new websites, sort of mini sites for PBL for remote learning. And so if you just go to our site and search remote learning, you'll get that. We've had a lot of free webinars, about a dozen, not quite this spring, with both our own staff and with teachers sharing the projects they've been doing online. And those are all written up as a blog by me afterward. I've been cranking out tons of blogs. We've gone to three blogs a week since mid-March, all about the pandemic and related topics. So there's lots of examples of projects people are doing from all grade levels, K through 12, and tips and lessons learned and tech tools. We've got that. We do have, as I mentioned, we converted all of our workshops to online formats. And the good thing about that is the teachers, by going through our workshop, they're actually learning how they can do PBL with their students because they're using the same tools, the Zoom, the breakout rooms, the Nearpod, the Padlet, all those tools they're using in our workshop, they can go back and use with their students.
That is key. So that is key, my friend.
Yeah, that's
practice
really
what you
helps.
Preach.
What you're right. It models the exact thing you're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
You have to.
We've also got a new ebook for parents coming out. Parents and families, and caregivers whose kids are home. It's a guide for parents on project-based learning. There's 21 projects they can use with their kids at home, and maybe they want to do something over the summer, or maybe when school starts again in the fall and their kids are home part of the time. Or they just decide they want to keep their kids home. It's a free ebook. It's being launched in about a week, and or maybe even a little less. It'll be on our site, I think, at the end of this week, June 12th. And it's going to be like a nice, easy download for parents with these 21 ready-to-go projects. And we're also coming out in the fall with some new books for elementary, middle school, and high school teachers on how to do PBL with a big section on how to do PBL remotely. So we've been responding quickly.
Nice.
Fortunately, as an organization, we are used to working remotely as an organization. About a third of our staff work from home in various parts of the country anyway. So we were already very used to Zoom and Asana and project management tools and lots of things we use, which teachers can use with their kids too. So we've made a pretty smooth transition. But the demand is out there because people are really interested in project-based learning. It's being mentioned a lot, you know, as a solution. And so we're hopeful that that we're really, I mean, it's been catching fire for several years now, as you know. We're hoping that will continue.
It has been. And you know, it's a lot of, I don't want to say it's word of mouth, but I hear that. Okay. It's obviously based on fact and all that, but I hear it. And you get the sense that there's a groundswell out there, project-based learning. I want to ask you one other question. This is an issue that we're very focused on, and I just want to talk to you, just get your thoughts on it, especially with what's going on these days. We're really trying to create a more equitable, not equality, but equity for all kids. And do you see PBL fitting into that? Okay, that whole.
Oh, we totally do. Yes.
And that's important these days because that's part of the argument. Wait, John, that's part of the argument, okay, that teachers are going to use when they go to their superintendent, when they go to their principal and say, we've got to use this because this is an equity based system. And this is something that, and every school district recognizes that. But how does it work? Just put your thoughts in there.
Right. We think PBL really should be for all students. All students deserve it. You don't just give it to the kids who are, you know, in gifted programs or special programs or genius hours or maker spaces, make it a part of your regular curriculum for all kids. And the research shows it does work for all kids, English learners, kids who are, you know, quote unquote, below grade level in their test scores. You don't save the good stuff until they've reached a certain level. Give them the good stuff now.
Right.
And, I wrote a blog for your journal, for ACNE, where I talked about some of the barriers, where a lot of people think, well, you got to just teach these kids the basic drill and kill until they're up to a certain level, then you can give them project-based learning. And some people have called that the pedagogy of poverty, because you see it more in low-income schools. And we just think PBL can be transformative for all kids, but especially, you know, Black and brown students, students of color, students who are low-income. PBL can give them a sense of power, a sense of agency. They've made a difference in their community, solving some real problem.
Mm-hmm.
They've talked to adult experts in the real world. They've been engaged, finally, in their learning. They're not just passively sitting there doing what the authorities want them to do. So you see higher attendance rates, high school completion rates, getting into colleges and staying in college for low-income kids, first in their families to go. So it takes more than just PBL. I mean, it takes a lot of changes in school culture as well. But together, PBL plus changes in school culture and conditions, and I think that's the solution to help all kids really transform their lives.
Yeah, and it would be so wonderful, and I hope those teachers in the urban areas and teachers who are in these situations recognize this, okay? That this project-based learning is something that brings out the best, and there's another side to it, you know, the collaboration. All right, if we can get kids of all races and colors working together, it makes for a whole different adulthood. All right. And that's what collaboration
that's right.
is about, and respect for each other, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, this is a way to do it because it's built around the whole need for collaboration. It's just great stuff, man. I'm telling you, you guys are doing great things. You know, you're always welcome to write for us, my friend. You're always welcome to put stuff
yeah,
in
I'd
there.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do it again. Sure.
Do it. Okay. I'll send you an email to remind you as soon as we're done here, and you can do it. We love having you write for us. It's good stuff. We're really
right.
interested in what you're doing. Right.
Right.
What can
Thanks,
I tell
man.
You, man? It's a strange new world out there, but we're going to all make it through, and hopefully it's going to be all better. Okay? Take care of you. Where are you in San Francisco? You said at the beginning, are you in San Francisco literally now?
Actually, I live in Mill Valley. Yeah. Just across the Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay, so I'm right across. I know where it is. So what's it look like? Do you feel like things are getting back to normal a little bit?
A little bit. I mean, I'm still kind of staying put.
Yeah,
we're a little higher risk here, being a little older and stuff. But we're slowly getting out, and more people are. I mean, some restaurants are opening for outdoor seating, and some businesses are open, but it's still pretty quiet. You know, lots of walks in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's good. Here
that's,
in Maine, we're just starting to reopen now a little bit. You know,
we'll see
where it goes. So wear your mask when you're outside. Okay, I hope everybody does.
Yeah.
All right,
they,
John. We'll talk soon.
All right, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. You have a great day. Stay safe out there. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. John Larmer, everybody, editor-in-chief over at PBL Works, pblworks.org. And by the way, PBL Works, it does work. All right? It does. All right? So please check it out, pblworks.org. I think it's a good thing for right now. What can I tell you? We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Go over to ace-ed.org, and find out all the wonderful things we're doing. We'll get another article from John over there, okay, either in the magazine or on the website, all about equity and access. And please join our consortium. Everything we do over there is free, okay? And we want your voice heard. So thank you so much for listening. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening.